is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there across America listening to us on the Internet, of course, we always appreciate your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or if you'd like to give us a call here in the Central Coast, our number is 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But right now, of course, why we're waiting to get our special guest on the line. His name is David Bresnahan. And David was a member of the Utah legislature for a time. He has his own talk show. And, of course, he's given that up to do full-time investigative reporting. And he now is writing articles for the WorldNet Daily, trying to get people to understand what's really going on behind the scenes. And, of course, right now he's just completed the third in a series of three articles. I suppose it was third. It would have to be three articles, wouldn't it? But he's just completed the third in three articles addressing something known as martial law in America. And this really involves the fact that the National Guard is to be mobilized in, I believe it's in May of this year. And, of course, what they want to do is find out if you can mobilize the National Guard without using telephones or the usual means of communication. And, of course, the reason for this is because they're anticipating that there may not be telephones available in after the Y2K occurs, and I'm talking about December of this year, or maybe even sooner than this year. In fact, those of you who are regular listeners to our program will recall that we have mentioned some people think we're going to start having troubles in September of this year. In fact, we'd gotten a call recently from a good friend of ours living in Central America, and one of her friends there is a very highly placed government official who had recently been brought to New York City and briefed at the United Nations as they were briefing a number of government leaders from throughout the world. And they were telling him of all things about Y2K and how the Y2K system was going to have a disastrous effect throughout the world. But the country that was going to be primarily affected was the United States of America, because we were so dependent upon computers, and, of course, the date at which this would begin to befall America was not January 1st, the year 2000, but rather September 9th, 1999. Now, why is that? Well, because built into these crazy computer programs and crazy computer chips is a key. And it says if you want to turn off a computer, you just type in 999. And, of course, on September 9th, 1999, the date will be 090999. And what happens when you turn the computer off that way? Why, sometimes they don't come back again. In other words, sometimes all memory, everything is lost. Well, I don't know what's going to happen when the coming of the new millennium. But what I do know is the fact that something is about to happen, or at least this whole Y2K is going to be used to create a perception that something is going to happen, and it may well be used to justify the implementation of martial law. Now, those of you who have seen our War Powers Act 4-tape set, you know that it includes a Senate report dating back to 1973, and it was the hearings on the emergency powers laws, which are basically executive orders that had been passed. And the report comes out over the name of Senator Charles Mathias and Senator Frank Church. and basically says that the executive orders are in place. There have been four declared states of emergency, one with President Roosevelt, one with Harry Truman, and two with Richard Nixon. And these executive orders gave the president the ability to take over control of everything and declare martial law in America anytime he deemed fit and totally circumvent our Constitution. And, of course, most Republicans weren't worried at that time because, after all, Richard Nixon was the president, and he wouldn't do anything like that, would he? Well, he didn't get a chance to. As you know, very shortly after that, he resigned from the presidency. But what's really most significant about this entire story is that most people have never heard of this Senate report. And since Bill Clinton has been in the White House, he's been passing more and more and more and more executive orders. And in 1994, he issued executive order 12919, which simply reiterated that all previous executive orders were still in place. And if you get these, and we actually have them all together now, it'd be rather expensive to send them out free to everybody. They are available, or will be available here in about 2 or 3 weeks. And if you want all of the executive orders, and you want to see them, actually hold them in your hand, we'll get them and make them available for you. But these executive orders allow the president to start rounding up people and putting them into concentration camps. And, of course, those camps are out there all across America. They're just there in case of a national emergency. But could they be utilized to take away our freedom? Well, let's talk to David Bresnahan. He's just now on the line here. Hi, David. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, good to be with you.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself? I've already told him you're a member of the Utah legislature. You're a talk show host and investigative reporter. What else is there to know about you?
That's plenty. That's enough for anybody.
All right, fine. Well, now you've come across this story. Why don't you tell our listeners why you're so concerned and what they should understand about what lies ahead?
Well, first of all, my concerns are really not as relevant. As an investigative reporter, I don't write editorials. I write hard news stories. I go out, I investigate, I get facts, I get quotes from people involved, and I report those things, and I leave it to my readers to take that information and formulate their own opinions. Obviously, as any reporter would do, I report on stories that are of interest and of concern to me. Because I report on it doesn't mean that I agree with the opinions of the people I report about. I faithfully convey their information, even if it's contrary to my own. So that's pretty much the role that I fit into. And with this particular story that's of interest here, it deals with the Y2K situation, the problem with the dates in the computers and that little bug that we're going to run into on New Year's Eve. And I have been following to try to find out the aspects of that story that aren't getting reported in the mainstream news. I look under rocks wherever I can, and some interesting things come crawling out of those rocks. Well, I had an opportunity a few weeks ago to spend an hour and a half with Senator Bob Bennett. And Senator Bennett is the chairman of the Senate Special Committee on the year 2000. And in that role, he has been sounding the alarm very loudly. He has been warning of very grave dangers because of computer failures that will occur if this bug is not fixed. And he has been doing his best to, he says, not be Chicken Little, but instead to be Paul Revere on this particular issue. And I think he makes a very good point, because there are those who sounded alarm, and they are considered to be alarmists and extremists, and he tries to make clear that his goal is not to frighten and to scare, but to motivate companies and individuals to do something about this while there's still time to get something done. Now, in his interview, I did four stories on this, and in one of those stories, I quoted him as saying, in response to a question, which was, will the United States declare martial law because of Y2K? Are there plans for this, or are there at least contingency plans in case there are disruptions of power and telecommunications and people become frightened and panic and have riots and so forth? Would there be the need for martial law? And he said, and I quoted him as saying, that there were no plans for martial law and no plans to call out the National Guard, and that he had not been involved in any discussions for that. Now, the reason I asked it was because there was a hearing in his committee last year before the Senate in which he asked that very question of the Deputy Secretary of Defense, John Hammer. And so I wanted to see if there had been follow-up on his part. And he said there had been no further discussion since that committee meeting. Well, that news story was read by some high-ranking officers in the National Guard who work in the National Guard Bureau back in Washington, D.C. We're proud to say that WorldNet Daily has over 2 million readers now, and we count many, many government employees, military and otherwise, as our readers. And they read these articles and felt that it was important to contact me and let me know that Senator Bennett was wrong. These officers called, and we spoke by phone separately. They didn't call together. And they wanted me to know that the National Guard did have plans to have the National Guard come out and protect our cities and critical infrastructure and so forth, as is the job the National Guard will be called to in various disasters. And they felt that Senator Bennett just simply didn't know of these plans, that he wasn't trying to hide anything, but that he just didn't know. But they felt that it was important that these plans be known. And over several days and several phone calls, I tried to convince them to go on the record, to let me use their names. But they were very critical. They were not just informing me of these things. They were very critical of the Guard. They were very critical of President Clinton. And they were disapproving of the particular tactics being used in the planning of this, in that the federal government is not letting the public know the full extent of the problems that they're anticipating from Y2K. And these individuals believed that at the heart of that was a political decision, that high-ranking politicians, including those in the White House, had the desire to exploit this issue, to take advantage of fear that would take place so that they could further manipulate the public. The comments from these officers was that people in a state of fear will submit to loss of freedoms that they might not otherwise be willing to accept. And so they said this was a masterful move by a master politician. They didn't believe, of course, that he had anything to do with creating the problem, but that he saw an opportunity and that he was taking full advantage of it. Their comment being, if the public was well aware of the threats of Y2K now, while there's time to prepare to deal with those problems, that there would be far less fear and far less panic when the problems occur if people know what's coming. People are afraid if something catches them by surprise and they're unprepared for it. So these officers feel that the policy of the government is wrong, and they felt that it was their duty to speak out and make known their concerns. And so over several days we had those discussions, and then I came out with a series of stories. There was actually four. And in the process of doing this, Stan, it's very interesting in this position when you've got five high-ranking officials who won't let their name be put in print. The reason I had five of them is because the first officer who called me gave me this story, and I said, well, this is great, and I do want to do an article, but I need to use your name. And he said, no. And I explained to him, just as I do to any source that comes to me and won't go on the record, I explained to them that they've got to come up with other sources who can corroborate what they're doing, what they're saying, and they have to give me some kind of documentation that will support it. And if I have all of those things, then I'll do the story. But I will not write a story just because one person says, you know, they've got a gripe about something. Because
sure,
it could be many, many contingencies that I'm not being properly told and given an accurate story. So the bottom line here was, he ended up getting five officers to call me independently on their own from their homes and talk with me over those several days.
Now, these were fairly high-ranking military officers, right,
yes,
in the National Guard, right.
Yeah, just under the general back there. These, of the five, three of them actually sit on the committee that's making these plans.
All right, now, what was this about, having a mobilization or a planned mobilization, something in May of this year?
Yes, and that's what this committee has been planning in conjunction with FEMA. I must say, too, they did provide me documentary evidence to support this. They faxed me over 30 pages of documents that they've used in these meetings. The plan calls for FEMA and the National Guard to have a joint exercise on May 1st and 2nd. It's a two-day exercise. The goal and purpose of this is to see if they can successfully have what's known as a recall. That's to get all 480,000 members of the National Guard called into duty. And normally that's a three-day process. I don't know why, and neither do these officers, but for some reason, FEMA is insisting that it be 2 days, May 1 and 2 only, not three. And they seem to, their conjecture, they think that the FEMA believes it can be done in two because they're not actually having the officers report. They are simply informing the officers, and that's not the officers, the members of the Guard. They're informing them that they are having an exercise and that if this was a real emergency, that they would have to report to a military installation for duty. Well, because they don't have to report, apparently FEMA believes they can get this done faster than the normal three-day call-up.
But now, are they going to use the regular means of communication?
Well, that's exactly it. The Y2K situation would be that the phones would be all out, television and radio would be out. They're assuming a total communications blackout, and that the only way to reach these men would be through battery-powered radios. But those radios will only be in the possession of the chain of command down to the local level. And at that point, in order to get the part-timer, the weekend warrior, to come out to duty, they are physically going to have to go and knock on the doors. And so they're establishing their own little grapevine, if you will, so that once they knock on certain doors, those people go knock on someone else's door and so on their way in to being called up. And it's an interesting event. Each of these people who are getting their doors knocked on will actually just sign a piece of paper stating that they've been informed, and then they'll be happy they don't have to actually report. They can go back into their home. And they're expecting that they will get to 95% of the 480,000 Guard members in that two-day period of time to have them sign that little piece of paper. And that's the test they're planning to have. Now, there are others in the Guard who are doubtful the test will take place on those dates. And their reasoning behind that is the radio system that will be put into place is called a high-frequency radio system. And it's used by many government agencies. It's used by Civil Air Patrol. Many of them have high-frequency radios. This is a National Guard unique system. It's a secure system for their own command and control functions. And it's not in place. They are, at this moment, putting up antennas and installing radios all over the country to put this thing in place. And not only is it not operational, the people who will run it haven't been trained.
Well, now,
at least many of them haven't been trained.
But now, why aren't they using some other things? They must have had other means of communication. Why are they suddenly shifting over to this? Is this because this is not a Y2K dependent system?
It's battery operated and diesel power generator operated.
Okay. So this is like taking a step back in time.
Oh, very much so. It's going back, a good 30 years at least, and using much older technology and it's not in place. Now, there, I have a copy of a memo from 1993 that ordered this to be set up in anticipation of loss of communications. This would be a system that would be set up. Well, even though the design was put into place for a nationwide radio system, they never actually set it up. So now they're having to set up a plan that was formulated in 93 that they were rather recalcitrant about.
Well, now, you know, the thing that is disturbing is, do we have any idea how bad things are going to be? Are we really going to lose our communication systems, you know, in December 31st, 1999? Are we really going to lose maybe our ability to provide the services that are needed by our civilian population? Do they really anticipate there's going to be a riot in the major cities?
Well, let me refer back to the articles so that I'm not necessarily giving my opinion, but giving you the facts as I was able to report them. And this, of course, for those that may not be familiar, it's on WorldNet Daily is the name of the newspaper. And that's on the Internet, worldnetdaily.com. Now, what I found is that the National Guard is not just planning for the worst. They have expectations, very high expectations, that there will be significant power outages and significant loss of communications all over the country. They do not believe it'll be a total blackout. They believe that it will be what they call a rolling blackout, that power will be coming on and off in many places, and that it will have a ripple effect. The loss of power will cause loss of communications. The loss of communications causes loss of power, because the power companies use the phone lines to send data transmissions between them for their power grid. Without that, the power lines potentially could actually burn up, the wrong amount of power going through those lines, and they just melt right off the phone poles. All the computers that control the amount of power that flows through the wires would not be able to communicate with each other, and you could have two power plants sending power down the same set of wires, for example. It's a very complicated system that could only be controlled by computers. So the end result is that they have safeguards to prevent that from happening. When the communication system shuts down, there are automatic shutdowns that shut down the power system. And we have a major problem with the nuclear power plants. There's 103 of those supplying 20% of the power to the United States. And The real problem we have there is that nuclear power plants are hazardous in a situation in which there is a shutdown. When there is what they call a scram, it's similar to, now there are safeguards that will shut down the power plant, but when that happens, it's like you slamming on the brakes in your car very, very suddenly to avoid hitting a dog that runs out or something. It puts a huge stress on the system. And if it's an old car, and if there's anything worn, and if there's things that are ready to give, it could give right then. Many of the nuclear power plants, according to a couple environmental groups I interviewed today, and for a story that's coming up now, I'll be doing over the weekend and have it out next week, some of the environmental groups are pushing to have the power plants turned off at the very latest in December, so that they will not even be a factor when the Y2K situation comes, rather than take the chance. And they're pointing to the government. I called the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they claim that they will not have a problem. We will not lose power. The nuclear power plants will be up and running, and they'll be producing power on the 1st of January. And yet they were using some wording that reminds me of the gentleman in the White House, because it's choice of words that sometimes is the key element here, and you have to make sure you know what game they're playing. And here's what they're doing. There's a terminology being used called Y2K compliant. And Y2K compliant means you have fixed your software, and it now functions properly with the proper date, with no problem at all. The bug is gone. That's Y2K compliant. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is not using that term. They are saying that the nuclear power plants will be Y2K ready, which means they'll be ready to operate. But they will not be compliant. And the way they're doing this, Dan, you see.
What does that mean? That sounds like double talk. That
it
sounds
is.
Like,
it's
that sounds
definitely
like Bill Clinton.
Double talk, and I think their boss taught them how to do it.
Right.
And the meaning of ready is somewhat ambiguous depending on which agency you're talking to, but the general term means that they have done what they call a workaround. They have found a way to keep the software running even though the bug is not fixed. The problem with that, the complexities of software programming are such that you may not have thought of all the possibilities in those algorithms that make the thing run. And so it may work itself around the problem under certain circumstances, but when some contingency factor comes up, then suddenly it may not be working anymore. So it presents new risks, new hazards into the nuclear power plant formula that is causing alarm for some of the environmentalists, and that's why they would like to have them shut down, because there's that unknown factor. A workaround, for example, could be as simple as programming the wrong date into the computer. If your computer won't work on January 1st, 2000, then why not tell it it's January 1st, 1990, and just set the date incorrectly? Well, that would be fine on your home computer if you are not doing anything on your computer that requires the use of a date in the programs you do. But in the computer at a nuclear power plant, there are many, many other factors involved. And with the wrong date in the computer, there are many things that can go wrong on you. So it's very critical that in major complicated systems that that workaround not be the solution that they're using, because there are predictably problems that will occur. So I hope I haven't been too complicated. I've tried to explain this as simply as I can. But the bottom line is, you asked how major will the problems be. Senator Bennett answered that for me when he said, we don't know. What we do know is there will be problems. We don't know if there will be a lot of them or just a few of them. We don't know if they'll last a long time or just a short time. We just know there will be problems. And so the prudent person will then have to calculate, what kind of effect does this have on me personally? And that's one of the things that we're working on now. We're putting together a little workbook that people can use to guide them to find out. There is actually a way for you to know what's your power plant in your area doing. What about the water treatment facility? Will they be up and running? Will water flow through your pipes? There are places where it will not. And there are water companies right now in the United States will flat out tell you, we will not be ready, and our computers will not be working on January 1st. There's banks that will not be ready. My credit union is already having problems. I bought airline tickets the other day, and I called and did that with a credit card over the phone. The airline called me back, well, the travel agent called me back several hours later and said, gee, Mr. Bresnahan, you're going to have to give us a different credit card. And I said, what's wrong? And they said, well, it won't go through. And I said, well, that particular card is actually not a credit card. It's a debit card. And I've put several thousand dollars in that account. There's money there. So it's got to have some other solution. And it was a Y2K problem. My card had an expiration date after the year 2000, and my credit union couldn't handle it. Wouldn't work in their computer.
We're going to have to just take a quick break here, and when we get back, we'll open up the lines here at 464-8295 or at 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you're out there across America listening to us.